I'll start with what I was going to finish with. Leonard Ravenhill, the great revivalist, said, and he says it in that revival hymn, if you know that recording, he says, the world outside there is not waiting for a new definition of Christianity, it's waiting for a new demonstration of Christianity. Kind of get a bit worried when you hear preachers say that we need a fresh revelation of who Jesus is, because it kind of implies that we're a bit bored with him, or a bit bored with the Bible, or we're a bit bored with our Christian walk. For me, that could not be further from the truth. I need a fresh revelation of who Jesus is. Because the world out there is dying without it, without him. This world needs to know who Jesus really is. They don't need a new Jesus. They don't need a more hip with it kind of contemporary Jesus. They don't need that. They just need this fresh demonstration of in his church of who Jesus really is. And it's for this reason that I tend to predominantly speak out of the Gospels, and I'll speak about Jesus and what he said, what he does, or what he taught, really in the hope that if I talk about that long enough, I might eventually say something of some value to that end. I don't apologize. I apologize for the quality of my speaking, but I won't apologize for focusing on Jesus, because we need to know him better. What his ministry is, what he wants to do among those that we live among, and our families, our loved ones, friends, work colleagues, whoever, and neighbours. I kind of had a feeling as well that when Helen was praying during worship, I just sensed that Jesus was wanting to make himself more real to us, and maybe in a fresh way, perhaps a demonstration of his power. And I know some of you have come in with pains and ailments, and I know half of you are sick. So we just are going to pray. When I finish talking, we're going to minister. We're going to minister here, I think, at the front. And we're going to just ask Jesus to come and heal as Jesus would have when he walked to this earth, when he started that ministry. I'm going to start in John chapter 1, if you've got a Bible, if you want to follow it, starting at verses 43 to 51. And the context of this is that Jesus is calling his first disciples. Andrew was one of the first to be called, invites his brother Simon Peter to come and meet Jesus. And in this account, in these verses, we have Philip inviting Nathanael to come and meet Jesus. So starting at verse 43 in John 1. It says, the next day Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, follow me. Well, that's all Jesus said, but Philip did. Anyway, I assume he said more, but I don't know, perhaps he didn't. Perhaps there was enough of an anointing on that those two words to cause Philip to follow him. Anyway, Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathanael and told him, we have found the one Moses wrote about in the law, and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Nazareth? Can anything good come from there? Nathanael spat back at him. It says, Nathanael asks. Come and see, said Philip. When Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said of him, here truly is an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. "How do you know me?" Nathanael asked. Jesus answered, "I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you." Then Nathanael declared, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus said, "You believe because I told you, I saw you under the fig tree. You will see greater things than that." He then added, "Very truly I tell you, you will see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." First thing to note in that interaction between Philip and Nathanael is that Philip is not drawn into an argument with Nathanael. Rather, he says, "Come and see." In the absence of the manifest power of the Spirit of God, or the tangible presence of Jesus, which we were enjoying this morning, all we have is argument. And we should have confidence to say to someone who doesn't know Jesus yet, or maybe cynical, like Nathanael, "Come and see." You would like to have confidence to say, "Come to church and meet with Jesus." Confident that they will meet with him in our midst and not be turned off by the idea, or not turned off the idea by some of the stuff that we do. "Come and see" was essentially the invitation that I resisted until I was at my lowest ebb when I was in my early 20s. I resisted it until I was ill enough, desperate enough, to lay aside my pride and to set foot into church. And it was there that I met, Jesus met with me in healing power. And it was there where he started to reveal his unfathomable grace and love for me. I went very skeptically, reluctantly, but in God's grace, he gave me this life-changing encounter. And like so many we read about in the Gospels, when they bump into Jesus, they're changed forever, as was I. This disillusioned Nathanael went to see for himself, and Jesus spoke such powerful words to him. They changed the skeptical Nathanael into a believer in an instant. But what did he say? What did Jesus say to him? What he said was, "I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you." But those words changed Philip's life. Now, superficially, and I know a lot of us have had a lot of experience of seeing the prophetic ministry work and being recipients of prophetic words and so on, and really value that prophetic ministry. And superficially, when you look at this prophetic word, as prophetic words go, it's not very impressive. There were and there still are a lot of fig trees in Israel. And everyone sat under a leafy fig tree to get relief from that scorching Middle Eastern sun in the heat of the day. And it would be a bit like Jesus coming in here and saying to someone, "I saw you while you were watching telly." You know, for a lot of us, it would be, you know, it doesn't take much discernment to come up with that word. Because, you know, there's a fair chance that a lot of us, not everyone, but a lot of us would have watched telly in the last 24, 48 hours. What is not obvious, though, is what was in Nathanael's heart as he sat under that tree, and what he was praying or crying out to God while he sat under that fig tree. But by the Spirit of God, Jesus saw and heard Nathanael's cry. And we can only really deduce that Nathanael was praying, what Nathanael was praying from his response to what Jesus said to him. It's probably something along the lines of, "God, would you look at me? Would you turn your face towards me? God, can you see me? God, do you even care about me?" Do you even know I exist? There is, in the Old Testament, there's the Aaronic or priestly blessing in Numbers 6, starting at verse 23. And it's where the Lord said to Moses, "Tell Aaron and his sons, this is how you are to bless the Israelites. Say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace." You can't turn your face towards someone without looking at them. And Nathaniel was, I am assuming, not feeling that blessing of God on his life. And without it, we would feel desperate, we'd feel disillusioned, disappointed in God, alone. We need that. We need to know. What did Nathaniel say when Philip told him that he'd found the one Moses and the prophets had written about, the Messiah, the one all of Israel was waiting for? He kind of spat his reply back at Philip, "Nazareth. Can anything good come from there?" And it was a genuine disbelief that anything good could come from there. Nazareth really did not have a good reputation. But his response was probably, you know, born out of fatigue and disillusionment. And before Jesus, there had been many pretenders to this messianic title. And each had failed. Each revolution had sort of petered out or led many of the followers to their deaths at the hands of the Romans. So you can understand Nathaniel's position, his heart. He'd longed to see God move. He'd longed to see the Messiah, so many Jews had. Bill Johnson, I haven't quoted him for at least a week, likes to say that Jesus is perfect theology, meaning that if you want to know what God is like, simply look at Jesus. And in this passage, we see in Jesus how God deals with Nathanael's disappointment, how he would deal with our disappointment, how he deals with his disillusionment and his skepticism. This is how God deals with our disillusionment and our skepticism. How his feelings of insignificance and invisibility, he dealt with them supernaturally. It was by that power of God working through Jesus that with the simplest of words, he changes Nathanael's life forever, because they come from that loving heart of our omnipotent, our omniscient God, who knows all and sees all and redeems all and is always with us. If you operate, or if you want to operate in prophetic gifts, do not be afraid to be like Jesus and give a simple word. I want to make this point. It doesn't need embellishment to make it powerful. Embellishing a word that you think you've got from God, if you think you're hearing from him and you think God has given you a word for someone, embellishing it rather than making it more powerful is more likely to dilute it. It doesn't need embellishment to make it powerful. Just look at what Jesus did. And I would say the same when we come to pray for each other. When we pray for healing. And there's this big dilemma. Somebody's coming to you, they're really ill, they're on death's door, and if you were just to pray, "Be healed in Jesus' name," and move on to the next, you would appear to be callous, you seem callous, uncaring. So we do our very best joined up prayers, partly because we think we've got to convince God that he needs to heal this person, But also because we want to make that person feel valued and loved, etc., etc. But actually all we need, all anyone ever needs is that demonstration of Christ, that power working in us. Pray that we get that. Just keep praying with us that we have that fresh outpouring of God's Spirit. I've used this example before, and it happened a while back, so forgive me if I get it slightly askew. There's this chap called Larry Randolph, who, and I have used this example before, and he's kind of known for his prophetic gifting. Anyway, he was in a meeting, and he was ministering, and he felt God had a word for a particular woman in this meeting. And so he invited her to stand up to receive the word that God was about to give to her. As he started to minister, the only word he had for her was that her birthday was in April. God says, your birthday is in April. And that was all he had. He didn't have anything more than that. And he started to panic. And by his own admission, he actually guessed the date. He thought, I was going somewhere in the middle, 15th, whatever it was, 15th of April. And he had nothing more than that. Forgive me if I'm telling this wrong, but I think this happened a few years back. Anyway, it was painful for him to bring that. Anyway, and so he kind of left the meeting early and embarrassed. And it was some time later he was speaking either in the same place or the same town, but about a year later he was speaking there. And this woman found him and explained how his word had so ministered to her. And I think that she'd either been adopted or something, and like Nathaniel, felt very alone, unloved, insignificant to God. And she'd probably even cried out that day, do you even know that I'm born? You know, in that same vein as Nathaniel. And so that word, whilst seemingly super lame and really quite naff and even painful for Larry Randolph, who's experienced in all of this, actually changed her life around, answered that cry, and knew that God saw her, knew that God heard her prayer. And I love that. I love that simplicity. It didn't need embellishing. It was just a very simple word that changed her life around. The writer of the letter to the Hebrews, in his introduction to Jesus, says, in chapter 1, verse 3, he says, the Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. Now we have the Bible, we have so much of what Jesus said, but we also have that within that is this, it's just this radiance, this demonstration of God's goodness, his glory, in that simple word, which was, I saw you while you were under that fig tree before Philip called you. That's a real simple word, but enormously powerful, and reveals the heart of the Father to Nathanael that changed Nathanael's life. And Nathanael was one of those that Jesus changed the world through. It's one of his few, one of the original 12 disciples. So that's pretty much what Bill was saying in his one-liner. Jesus is perfect theology. Jesus is perfect theology. You look at him and you'll know the Father. Look at Jesus and you're looking at the radiance of God's glory. Hear his words and you're hearing the Father. He changes lives. He makes us fall in love with him more and more every time we encounter him. The fake, on the other hand, will disappoint and disillusion us, much as it had with Nathanael. Leave us feeling orphaned, not having encountered the true Jesus, the true radiance of God's glory and his love. That's just the stark contrast between the genuine and just being nice to someone, giving them your best wishes. Ultimately, if it's not God, it's going to disillusion and disappoint. I want to leave you with a picture that Alan Scott used recently, and I was listening to him the other day, I just liked it. So I want to share it with you. Perhaps it spoke to me because of my guilt in this. He said, you know, when you're in a lift, an elevator, you're in a lift, say like in a hotel lobby, and you're just waiting for the doors to close, so you've gone up to your room, and you see someone heading towards your lift. You have that option of holding the doors open for them, or pretending you didn't see them and letting the doors close so you can have the lift wonderfully to yourself, that very confined space in this COVID-ridden world we live in. We know what we should do, and in that moment, and when the person makes the situation slightly more worse, when they're actually sort of running towards you, and they're going to, just by their very presence, fill your space, fill that cramped space, either because they themselves are large or they've got loads of bags and suitcases, and your comfortable lift then becomes very confined. And worse than that, they're very sweaty from running with those heavy suitcases. And they're going to be panting and breathing heavy once they come into that lift space with you. You know that, don't you? You know that dilemma. Doing the right thing, the charitable thing, the thing you know Jesus would do if he was by that door open button, becomes a little more difficult because there's personal cost involved. Alan Scott didn't really share that picture just because we're all bad in lifts. I have a selfish streak. But being a follower of Jesus, in a way, is like that. And we're on a journey, and if you could use the lift, heavenward. It's a nice little picture, isn't it? We're on a journey, and what he was saying was, hold the door open for others. Just hold that lift door open and let others join you on your journey. It comes with an inevitable cost to your personal comfort and convenience. But like Andrew and Philip, invite others to join you to meet with Jesus. And it's as simple as that. That's all we're supposed to do, is just hold that door open and invite others in with us in our walk. Share what you know. Share what you see on a Sunday morning. Share what you hear. And there's always a chance that you're going to have someone like Will Ferrell in that film Elf, when he gets into that lift in the Empire State Building and he presses all the buttons for all the floors because it was pretty and it lights up. There's always a chance the person will be a bit like that. They'll come with baggage. So I just want to just close with that quote from Leonard Ravenhill again, that the world out there is not waiting for a new definition of Christianity, it's waiting for a new demonstration of Christianity. Be generous in life, be Christ-like in your ministries, loving, compassionate. Be powerful in your ministry. Expect to see God move. Know that Jesus is with you.